This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Dynamite show prepared for you today as we talk to Wayne McGahee yet again about the Florida State preseason camp. We'll spend most of our time on the offensive side of the football. We'll talk about injuries. We'll talk about the wide receiver position, the offensive line position, and then we'll wrap up talking about the running backs. We're joined again by Wayne McGahee, who has been in the Florida State practices for the last couple weeks as Florida State prepares for the season and preseason camp. And now actually starting this, we're recording this on Wednesday. Starting tomorrow on Thursday, they'll start to prepare for Oklahoma State. Wayne, good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, so let's go ahead and just start off with talking about something that, you know, we should be knocking on wood over and over and over again right now, is talk about some of the injury situations in camp. You know, you're always going to have injury situations in camp because, you know, you're as to use Jimbo Fisher's preferred language, you're just going to get a little banged and bruised as you're practicing and with the intensity that you need. But Florida State's been unusually healthy over the past couple years. And that's really not been any different this camp, though there have been a number of nagging injuries that we really do need to talk about. So can you update us on the injury front for Florida State at this point?
Well, right now, Florida State's, you know, they're really looking good for where they are in the fall. There are a couple nagging injuries that are, you know, setting some people back. You have Matthew Thomas, who had an ankle injury. He's been fighting for a job behind E.J. Levenberry and Reggie Northrup right now, and this was not the time for him to go down. Jimbo said that he should be back shortly, but it could affect him going forward. You also have Ryan Green, who was slated to be the third back coming into the fall, and he had a hamstring injury at the beginning of camp, and Dalvin Cook has just absolutely blown people away and stepped into that spot. You also have P.J. Williams and Ronald Darby. Both had slight hamstring pulls. Jimbo said that they were fine, they could play, but he held them out for an extended period of time because he already knows what he has with them at the position, and he'd rather have them healthy than trying to fight through it. Same thing goes with Cam Irving and his injury. We heard it was an ankle, but there's been nothing taped. He's still been participating, just strictly non-contact.
Yeah, Jimbo said that he got rolled up on a little bit in that situation, and you know that happens sometimes with linemen. I know it happened to me a few times as a receiver, where you know sometimes you got the ball carrier, the pile just sort of comes up on the backs of your legs, and you'll turn something or get rolled on, and it can really. It can jam you up or twist something and you can be sore for a while, but as long as it's not too bad, that you know that's something that linemen are generally pretty accustomed to playing through.
Yep, and then you've got Josue Matias. He had a lower leg injury, and he came back from that, but then he got a slight concussion. So he's been held out of practice, also still participating, just not doing contact.
Yeah, and as I understand with that one, didn't they say that he could have played, but it was just sort of being extra careful again, where you know he was passing the tests and all that. It wasn't really a serious concussion thing, but it was almost a pre-concussion, and they just wanted to make sure they took it easy on him. Am I right in remembering it that way?
That's correct. Jimbo said that both Matias and Irving would have played if the scrimmage on Tuesday had been an actual game. Both of them would have played, but since it's, you know, we're in the fall camp, there it allows them to get healthy.
Yeah, and how much of a benefit is it for Florida State to have two full offensive line strings? And we'll talk about that in just, you know, a little bit later in this podcast. But, I mean, two full groups that you can really trust and almost plug and play. I mean, I can't remember the last time Florida State was there, and here's why that really matters, to have that second group.
You know, absolutely. Jimbo has, you know, we had Rod Johnson and Kareem Moore step right in, no missing of any beats at all. So they, you know, having both of them, also having Mavetti on the other side, you know, Wilson Bell's been working in at left guard, or I'm sorry, at right guard a little bit. And, you know, it's, you know, you can tell with Trickett, he is just as willing to plug in a backup as he is, you know, willing to plug in a starter right now. That's how confident they are in these guys. Back to the injury front, though, the one real injury that, you know, to be concerned about is one that's left over from the spring with Olugwe. And he's got the Lisfranc injury. You know, he's still slated to come back, but he would be a starter right now with the way he was playing in the spring and his talent. He'd be a starter right now on this defense if he wasn't hurt. And it might take him a little while to get back into it, but he would be one of the best 11 players on the field.
Yeah, and I'm still not optimistic we're really going to see him in the long term. This season, that is a really difficult surgery to recover from. They're saying he's going to be back for Clemson. I'm just not sure he's going to be quite himself by that point. I mean, maybe by the end of the year, but I think that's a wait and see situation.
Absolutely. I mean, he's out there and he's on the bike constantly. He's always out there supporting his team, but, I mean, he hasn't put on pads once yet. So Jimbo said that he was ahead of schedule. I really haven't seen it.
Ahead of schedule with Jimbo.
Yeah. You know, there's been other small injuries. Dalvin Cook had a pinky finger injury that kept him from contact for, you know, the first week or so of fall practice, but he's back now. You know, you had Harrison and Rudolph coming back from injuries. They're both back now.
Yeah, and even with Rudolph, I mean, this is another example. You know, it's not just the veterans that they know for sure where they're, you know, what they're getting with them. Guy like Rudolph, he's coming off a fairly minor, but you know, an ankle surgery, foot surgery over the summer, and you know, playing on the field turf, it's just it puts more wear and tear on you, and he got sore, and they just basically they said, well, it's not worth us pushing you out there. If your foot's sore and you can't go the way that you want. And that's sort of reflective of the way that this staff has approached injuries in this camp and also last year and so on. They've really gotten all the more committed to making sure that they minimize injuries that are going to carry on and last. So they'll pull guys out and they'll, you know, they're just going to build more depth, but they're going to pull guys out and make sure that they're healthy. Because, you know, they've come to the conclusion that, you know, a 100% healthy player is superior to the 70% or 60% healthy, banged and bruised player who's gotten a few extra practice reps. And that's really interesting because, it, you know, in the past, you know, football coaches have been, you know, sort of renowned, sort of legendary for their machismo and this sort of thing where, you know, you've got, you know, the push through it, the, you know, rub some dirt in it kind of approach. And they've really not taken that. What's that?
Said the bear with the Junction Boys.
Yeah, exactly. Bear with the Junction Boys. And honestly, I mean, with the at Florida State, we had very much of that kind of mentality in the Bowden years as well. I mean, I remember going through mat drills and the hell on earth that was. And it was not really just for training purposes. It was for mental conditioning and for just the toughness factor of being able to survive something like that, going through with no water and, you know, these sorts of things that we had to do. And this staff just does not do that. You know, they are first and foremost wanting to make sure that guys are healthy. And I think, you know, if you start looking at it, they're taking the percentage plays on this that, you know, it's percentage wise, we're going to be better off with consistently healthy players. Our players are going to trust us more if they know that we're pulling them out when they actually are hurt. And, you know, we're going to get best effort. At the same time, you know, you wonder, you know, the one concern that, you know, a more traditionalist might have here is, you know, do you end up making your team softer by, you know, pulling these guys out when they're just a little dinged up? My instinct would be with an experienced team like this, when you're pulling a Cam Irving or a Josue Matias or a Darby or a PJ Williams, one of these guys. Those guys, you already know what you have, and you're not going to make them softer by pulling them out. So, I mean, odds are that's not going to really affect anything appreciably. But yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, the traditionalist would say, and, you know, it's kind of an interesting dilemma to put yourself in. But I actually, as I've gotten older, I've started to really prefer this kind of percentage approach to say when we're going to train. We're going to train specifically to the things that are going to transfer to the field, and yes, we're going to do that with a mind towards toughness and all of this. But we're not going to just push for toughness when it's not going to in drills that aren't necessarily connected, that aren't necessarily going to benefit directly what we're doing on the field. That's the approach that this staff has really taken, and I think over as I've gotten older, I've appreciated that more.
Well, you can go in and you can ask Sal Sinceri or Rick Trickett whether their team is soft and see what answer you get. I'm not going to do that because I value my head where it is. But, you know, I absolutely think that this is a better approach. You know, I've been in those situations where, you know, you're without water and, you know, you're hurt, but you don't want to say anything, and it just makes it worse. You know, it's just going to make it worse. And then, yeah, you know, they're testing your mental toughness, but it also degrades attitude and how you view things when you're having to go through everything and you're just hurting constantly. And it's like, it keeps getting worse, but you can't say anything because you don't want to seem like a sissy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that I think is still the approach in a lot of places around the country, but that has really not been the approach at Florida State. Now, at the same time, they have the GPS system, the Catalyst system that they use, that does tell you when guys are loafing. I mean, when a guy, you know, has shown the capability of moving at a particular rate, and then, you know, doesn't move at that rate, and he's not hurt. Well, you can you know, all and the way that they do it is all the players in the segment also get the reports. You know, this is something that's open. It's not just the coaches that get the reports. The players do, and they get each other's reports. And so they're holding each other accountable, saying, wait a second, you know, on these reps, you are going slow, man. What's up with that? And
yeah,
that's the way that I think they're starting to really sort of mediate that other side of it.
Jimbo's also been holding out a couple players. Not really holding out, but he puts non-contact jerseys on, say, Rashad Greene and Nick O'Leary every practice, because he knows what he has there. He knows that he's got two tough guys that are going to go out there and give him everything he has. I mean, no one on the team or anywhere else is going to call into question those guys' toughness. I mean, Nick O'Leary's been hit by a bus. You're not going to question that guy's toughness. So he puts them in non-contact jerseys, and he lets them practice. But, you know, He wants the best out of his players. In order to get the best out of his players, they have to be healthy.
Yeah, and it's very much an NFL approach. I mean, that's the way the NFL has been for a long time. They've minimized contact in camps and things like that, and in practice. You have to learn how to go hard when you're not even in pads, but you learn how to ratchet up the intensity, but to do it without the chance of hurting your teammates. And that's really what they're trying to do. And that's why, you know, the whole Ramsey incident came up at all, you know, a couple weeks ago. So anyway, I think that's basically it for the injuries. Can move on to the second segment here, and that's talking a little bit about how things have looked in these first couple scrimmages. For this particular episode, we'll focus on the young wide receivers again, and then the next episode we'll look at a few other things that have been coming up in the scrimmages and in what we've been able to see, but yeah, the young receivers, it's pretty clear at this point that none of them are going to redshirt at this point, and we can pretty well expect that Ermin Lane and Rudolph in particular are going to have some significant impact this year. That said, to me, as we talked on the last podcast, one of the best signs of all this is, as good as they've been, as well as they've composed themselves, Christian Greene
Christian Greene is still the starter on the outside. So what have you seen? And also, you know, you get some rumblings in terms of that. What are we seeing in terms of what to expect out of these scrimmages and such? I know Fisher was especially pleased with this passing game after this last scrimmage, after the third scrimmage.
Yeah, you know, Jimbo was very pleased. He wasn't just pleased with the scrimmage, though. He said he's very pleased with where the passing game has come along, where Jameis is right now, and where the young wide receivers are. He said he was especially pleased with Pops, as they call Christian Greene, said that he'd be a starter right now. And that's a really good sign, because it means that as good as the freshmen have played, and I can promise you they have looked great, Christian Greene is still standing out.
And they don't just play guys because of seniority. I mean, that's the thing. That's one thing for sure about this staff is if the young guy's better, they're going to favor the young guy because the older guy should be better. And the young guy has more room to improve. So the old guy has, you know, Pops has actually been performing apparently in practice.
Yeah, he honestly, they're different athletes, but he reminds me a lot of Kenny Shaw. He's always in the right place right now. He's never getting yelled at. He's catching the ball. He hasn't dropped a single thing from what I've seen. And, you know, he's doing everything right.
Well, and again, as we've said before, talent was never the issue with him. So much was just mental.
Absolutely. And Lane and him have been switching back and forth with the ones. Rudolph was working with the ones. Harrison got a couple reps with the ones, especially when they go out to 4 and 5 wide sets. Harrison is absolutely in there because the kid can fly like the wind. I mean,
yeah,
for
just
a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", he can fly.
He just doesn't quite have the natural hands yet that the others do. But, you know, that he's still developing in that front, but in that particular department. But he's going to have some opportunities, especially in second halves this year, to really flash. And that's what he can do, because he can, like you said, he can fly.
Yep. You also have the slot position where, you know, Kermit right now is running with the first team. That probably has a little bit to do with where Bobo Wilson's going to be suspended. We're still not sure about how long he's going to be suspended for, but right now Kermit's running with the ones, but Bobo's getting just as much time. And then you have Scooter Hagans, who's also working out at the slot, and he's not like Christian Greene right now. He's far behind. He's far and away the third slot guy right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to start seeing, even though he's running third right now, he will get, you know, those opportunities with Bobo out. I think Bobo's probably going to miss the first two games, if I had to guess. He's going to get those opportunities on the field where, you know, it takes a little bit more true receiving situations than what Kermit is suited for. He's going to get those chances. And then when they go to four wide sets and things like that, I think he's going to be in the ball game quite a bit this year in that sort of third down kind of role where, you know, Kenny Shaw made a lot of his catches last year. But, there's not a defensive coordinator on the schedule that is going to be happy to hear that Kermit Whitfield is going to be on the field quite a bit. Normally you don't have to worry about a slot receiver taking the top off your defense, but Kermit is the guy that you have to worry about there. I mean, last year you had to worry about Kelvin Benjamin in that regard. But you can kind of double a guy in that position. It's harder to do that actually with a guy from the slot, and it's certainly harder to do that with a guy who can run by anyone in the country. So
you can just ask Wake Forest about that. The first touch that he had went for 74 yards.
Yeah, you know. This is a guy that ask Auburn. I actually went back and looked a little bit at that particular play, the kickoff return against Auburn. Last week, and I saw a field angle that I hadn't seen before, and there's something that you can see sometimes from the field level where when you're watching it from up top, you can see what's going on, but you can't necessarily at times appreciate some of the speed differences and things that you can see when you're on the level of the field, and it was just obscene watching him hit the accelerator. On two separate occasions, the first when he accelerated through the hole, And then he took a look over and saw the Auburn safety running with an angle. And then he just sort of burst just again for another couple seconds and then sort of shut it down. And that initial burst when for those few strides right after he took a look over, it's just silly. And, it, you know, that's where you're going to see, I think, some folks on the defensive side for Florida State's opponents really wishing that that they were facing last year's offense rather than this one, which is, again, that's obscene. We also need to transition, though, to talk about then the offensive line, and also then we'll wrap up with the running back position. But let's again get back and talk about that offensive line. You mentioned earlier that Rod Johnson has really begun to fill out that that left tackle role on the backup role there. And you know, R and maybe have actually also stepped in as well at the guard and the other tackle position. You know, some of these newcomers have really stepped in and have impressed to the point where, you know, if, you know, before the camp started, you know, you would say that if Cam Irving got hurt, it would be utterly disastrous. And with the way Johnson's looked, I'm not totally sure that that's actually true now. You know, obviously, continue to knock on wood that is not something you have to discuss. But you know, that the cupboard is not empty behind this first line so far. So what have you seen from Rod and from Big Rod and some of these others here, in terms of where the offensive line is at the moment?
Well, first things first, could you imagine having this conversation about Rick Trickett's offensive line a couple years ago?
Yes, actually, I could. I could, and I did, because I expected this. And those who followed us at Noel Digest for a while know that that when Trickett was getting crucified by so many, and people inexplicably, in my view, wanted him fired because the offensive line in 2011 was not very good, thanks to, you know, a rash of injuries and youth and lack of depth. It takes years to build this sort of thing. So yeah, I did expect it, but boy, it is a big difference.
It is. I mean, it's even a big difference from last year. If Florida State had one player go down last year on the offensive line, you know, We're talking bye-bye national championship.
Well, I mean, if we're talking at the tackle position, yes. I mean, Reuben Carter is a good enough option at guard that he actually did step in and start a couple games for Trey Jackson when he went down a little bit early in the year, and composed himself very well. But it's a big difference this year, where at any of the positions on up front, they really do have a lot of flexibility. And again, as we talked earlier, the thing that gives you is it actually helps you keep your starters healthy when you have those guys behind them, because that means that in practice, those guys are taking reps, and the starters don't have to take quite as many reps. And then in games, when you've got a second group that you really trust, you can put them in an extra drive or two early and know that they're going to continue to, you know, to move things along. So if you've got an offensive lineman who's just a little banged up, you get up by 17 and you put in the second guy, and you just stay healthier over the course of the year as a result. That's where they are now. And actually, you know, as crazy as it is to say at this point, I would take Florida State's offensive line this year over anyone's in the country. And that includes Alabama, that includes anybody, and that's top to bottom. The first two groups at Florida State, I think, are better than anyone else has.
I wouldn't argue with you there. Those guys are big, physical, and nasty. I mean, Jimbo was asked the other day about the offensive line, because they come out every day of practice 20 to 30 minutes before everybody else and start working on their drills, and then they're usually the last ones to leave. And he said that's how we've done it when I've since he's been here, and that they're going to be bigger and they're going to be meaner than anybody else out there. So I wouldn't argue it. But going into the Rod Johnson thing, Rod's a fantastic football player. He was my favorite recruit from last year's cycle. I thought he was the second best offensive tackle in the country coming out of high school beside the Robinson kid that went to Alabama. He's fantastic.
There was not much of a gap between those two in my view, by the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, Robinson is definitely number one, but I think that you can make an argument for Johnson as well. But he's a great run blocker. He's great pass blocker. He doesn't lunge. That's another thing that you have to really, really like about him. When he goes into his blocks, he doesn't lunge. He stays within himself, and it really helps him. And he's just mean. When he gets his hands on you, you're not going anywhere. You're going in the dirt.
Well, you know, and
he loves to do it.
And we've got, you know, we've posted a ton of sights and sounds. You know, you've done a tremendous job from practice. You know, we've posted sights and sounds from basically every practice over the course of the preseason over at Noel Digest. And, you know, one of the things that really continues to stick out about Johnson, and it was something that I noticed in his high school tape, but, you know, it's a different thing at the college level when you start to see it, is he's got incredible balance. He's got such a strong base, and he's able to bend his knees and bend his hips and stay in balance so well, and, you know, is able to sort of move his feet and mirror naturally because he's got such good balance. And that's why you get a guy like that that doesn't have to lunge. And that's stuck out without question on tape, and that's a huge thing. And normally that's one of the things that comes later for offensive linemen, and he's got it as a true freshman. And a guy that's, you know, what, 6'7" and 330 pounds, you know, he already has all those tools. And to me, the thing, like I said, that sticks out is balance. He's just got amazing balance. And I think as a prospect, in that regard, he's actually ahead of Cam Irving. If you had to choose between the two of them early in their career at the offensive tackle position, and remember, people, as soon as Irving moved to tackle, were saying he's a probable first round offensive tackle. I think, you know, you'd probably take Johnson over early Cam as well. And again, that says a ton.
You know, absolutely. Johnson is definitely further along than Cam was when, you know, he switched over from defense because, you know, he's been playing the position for so much longer. But he's just like he passes the eye test, and, you know, he's going to have 4 years under one of the best teachers of the offensive line in the game right now. Like, there might have been an argument for Trickett's recruiting ability, but there is no argument for his coaching ability. The man's got it.
Well, it's really hard to recruit. At the end of the day, it's very hard to recruit offensive line to a program that has no buzz. There aren't a ton of really good, you know, elite prospects on the offensive line out there as it is. Florida is not a major hotbed for offensive line talent. You know, you can get just about any other position. You could basically stay at home in Florida and do very well. That's not really the case most often on the offensive line side. So normally you have to go nationally. And when you're going nationally with a Florida State team that's going 7-6, it's really hard to pull those guys into town. And what's interesting is as soon as Fisher took over and they had a little momentum in 2010, all of a sudden they started pulling players on the offensive side. So I think actually Trickett's, you know, the criticisms of Trickett as a recruiter are dramatically overstated. And again, it's because people looked at it and they said, well, why isn't he getting, you know, the great players? Well, I mean, circumstance can matter a lot. I remember when people were saying the same thing about Dossie and were saying the same thing about Odell Higgins. And I mean, if anybody wants to question Odell Higgins as a recruiter, that person has disqualified themselves as a recruiting analyst for sure. The man can flat recruit. And, you know, the sometimes you just go through a little bit of a dry spell. And I think that's what happened with Trickett, where, you know, he came in and, you know, the conventional wisdom is that it takes about 5 years to build an offensive line when you come, you know, from scratch. Trickett actually had, within 2 years of arrival, the 2009 offensive line was one of the 10 best in the country for sure. And the 2010 line was probably top 10 or 15 or so. You start looking at the numbers. When you're averaging over 5 yards a carry with Jermaine Thomas and Ty Jones as your running backs, that's a pretty good offensive line.
And they did that, you know, with, you know, it's not like the receivers are huge threats. You've got Rod Owens and in 09 you had Jarman Fortson, who was a threat, but you have Rod Owens and who else? Fortson in 09, you know, that
Easterling.
You had Easterling in the slot. You know, these are not guys that are even seeing the field in the same way as now. So, I mean, those lines were good, and he was able to coach those guys up right away. But it takes 5 years to build that. It takes, you know, and at the 5 year mark was 2012, and the offensive line was finally turned around in 2012. In 2013, they were great. So, you know, it takes a while to turn that position over. When he got to Florida State in 2007, the offensive line was there were a number of teams in the MAC, in the Mid-American Conference, that actually had better offensive lines than Florida State did when Rick Trickett arrived in 2007. And they had about five actual competent bodies. I'm not talking about Division I prospects. I'm talking about guys that could actually really strap on pads and do anything on the offensive line when he arrived in 2007. I mean, they just didn't have anybody there. And when you've got to put five guys on the field that can actually competently block in that environment, that it's really, really difficult to build from there. And you've got to start getting to where you've got 10 guys so you can run two units out there. It takes years to do that. I mean, these guys take longer to develop, but now that the program has cachet, we're starting to see that Trickett doesn't have a problem recruiting. You know, obviously he's getting help from Fisher, who's an elite recruiter. You know, the staff recruits in regions and all of this, and you know, you've got some great recruiters on the staff. But if kids were worried about playing for Trickett in the recruiting process, it would come through, and that's not been a problem. You know, you're starting to look now. They are pulling elite kids at this point. That, you know, the last few years, again, Rod Johnson is an elite prospect at the offensive tackle position. And what they've done is they've noticed, well, Florida State is a place to be, and a guy like Rick Trickett is putting guys like Cam Irving, a three-star defensive tackle recruit, likely into the first round. Well, that does kind of help recruiting.
You know, I mean, you know, Rod Johnson's an elite. He's an elite tackle prospect. You've got Abdul Bello, who's already committed to Florida State. I'm high on Cole Minshew, who's just an absolute monster. From seeing him at the Jimbo Fisher camp this year, I mean, huge kid.
And he was a Trickett find. I mean, the Florida State staff evaluated him before anybody else really noticed exactly how good that kid is, and his rankings are only going to go up.
Oh, absolutely. But we need to get back to the offensive line. We haven't even talked about Kareem R, who, you know, if he's probably – he's definitely one of the – you know, just best linemen that we have. Like, I would classify him as one of the five best linemen out there. If they are going to try and find a way to get him on the field, but he is awesome. Him coming in for the spring is what's setting him apart from, say, Mavity. Now, Mavity is going to be really good and he's going to play. But Kareem R coming in the spring, getting through the playbook, getting used to Coach Trickett, getting into the Vic Valoria strength and conditioning program, it's really paying off because when you hear Jimbo talk about him, it's like he's talking about a starter.
Well, I mean, the thing, if you look at him when he came in and you look at him now, he's transformed his body since he arrived. You know, he looks in the same kind of physical class as a Josue Matias. Which, you know, Matias looks like a 10-year NFL veteran, so that says a lot. And what's remarkable is that this is a guy who may not actually – he's probably not going to be a starter. He's going to get time. They're going to have to give him time. And there's going to be plenty of time to play in second halves this year. But you're looking at a guy that would have started on very nearly every Florida State team I can think of, at least going back to, say, 2002 or 2003 when they had – you know, the last really good offensive lines at Florida State before this
or Mark McHale.
Yeah, well, before Mark McHale, but I mean those lines were in spite of Jimmy Higgins as the coach there, who is also not a good offensive line coach at all. But they just had so much talent there. I mean, on the inside in 02, you had Todd Williams, rest in peace. You had Antoine Marambo, and you had Milford Brown on the inside. I mean, those guys were monsters on the inside. And then you had Brett Williams and Ray Willis and Alex Barron as your tackles. So, I mean, those were really good lines, but that was the last time that you had that. And going all the way back there, R is a starter on every other Florida State team going back to that point. And he's probably not going to start this year, which is, again, that just goes to show where things are at this point in terms of the roster.
Well, you also have Wilson Bell, who, you know, was working at the left tackle spot, you know, going into last year before he got hurt. He's now playing at the right guard spot. And, I mean, he's doing a fantastic job there. You've got Mavetti on the outside working at right tackle. And then you have Hofield when he's injured right now. But when he comes back, he's working with the second team. I mean, you take that line right there of Mavetti, Bell, Hofield, R, and Johnson, and you start that for 100 of the 120 teams in the country.
I'd say more than that. You probably start for all but maybe 5 or 10. But you know, and it says all you need to know when you look at the fact that Wilson Bell is at this point taking his reps at guard. Because the guy looked very good. You know, those in the program were very pleased with how he looked as a freshman at the tackle position. And, you know, he's a physical guy. But all of a sudden, when you bring in Rod Johnson and Mavity and Brock Rubel, who we haven't even mentioned so far, those guys are so much better and so much more mobile and so much more balanced and quicker on their feet than what you have from Wilson Bell, that they moved him inside. And so now, you know, you've got another masher inside, you know, kind of your Matias type guy inside, because you've got such good athletes on the outside that you don't need him out there. And that tells you, again, all you need to know, because, I mean, he's a good prospect and would be playing tackle most places. But, you know, and R actually is another guy. He can play left tackle. He's got the ability to play the left tackle position. But with Rod Johnson developing, They've just, you know, continued to keep R inside. I mean, he was taking reps at the left tackle position earlier in camp. And, yep, you know, that just goes to show exactly where they are.
No pun intended.
Exactly. So on that note, we can go ahead and flip this, and unless there's anything more you want to specifically say about the offensive line.
Just wanted to mention about R real quick. They really like him on the inside for this specific reason. Is because he moves so well that you can pull him and he can get out there. His footwork, and he moves so well. When they were running toss sweeps the other day with Carlos, R was the pulling guard. And he's out there, he's sealing the edge. He moves so well and so quickly that they love that about him.
Yeah, and again, what Trickett really looks for, he wants his guards to be mashers. He wants them to be really big, physical, nasty guys. But he requires that they be guys that can move well enough to get to the second level and get their hands and their helmets on linebackers. And that's both in the screen game and, you know, if you're running a zone scheme, which Florida State does in the running game, most of what they run, about, you know, 85% of what they run in the running game is a zone blocking scheme. When you're running almost all zone stuff, you've got to have guys that can get off the ball quickly. And in particular, they have to have a very quick second step off the ball. So you've got to have great feet, and then you've got to be able to move well enough with balance to get to the second level, to get to linebackers and even defensive backs and get your hands on them. So he wants that combination, which, of course, when he first got to Florida State, they had nobody who could do that. And then, you know, he started recruiting guys that could at least do that, but they weren't the mashers or the maulers that he wanted, because, you know, the guys that can do both are elite. And now that's what he's got. He's got, you know, you got four or five offensive guards on this particular roster that all can do what he wants on the inside and can do it at 310 plus, which, you know, there are very few programs that have had that sort of depth at that position to do what Trickett asks his guys to do, because he also doesn't like to combo block very much. He does not like to have a double team where then one guy has to move up to the second level, which is what most teams do in the zone scheme. Trickett likes to have his guys in a single blocking situation. He wants his center to be able to block one-on-one. He wants his guards to be able to block one-on-one so that he can release the other guy who would potentially have to initially double team before releasing to help with the block before releasing. He wants that guy to be able to free release to the second level. That's how he coaches it. He wants it to be done that way, if at all possible. The combo block for him is not the norm. It's the sort of reluctant, well, we can't handle him any other way kind of thing. And again, he's got a group of guys that by and large can do that. And again, when you can get to the second level for guys like, you know, Carlos Williams or Mario Pender or Dalvin Cook, life is good. Life is easy. So let's go ahead and move on to the last thing we're going to talk about in this particular episode, and that's the running back position. You mentioned earlier that Dalvin Cook has been absolutely killing it. We obviously know what we have in Carlos Williams on that front. We know what he can do. You know, he's 235-pound elite back. I think, you know, people are going to be talking about him in the same breath as your Todd Gurley type player by the end of the season. But then you've got Pender and Cook, who have just looked terrific in camp. And again, one of the more recent sights and sounds bits, you could see the fluidity of these guys who are 210 pounds, of these guys running downfield, catching passes, looking like receivers in terms of fluidity. But, you know, at 210 pounds and physical running backs, and obviously they can all fly. So, you know, the running back position just makes the offensive line job that much easier, and, you know, it just reinforces itself.
You know, absolutely. You know, you have three guys right now that are just good enough to play anywhere in the country. Pender is a little bit of an unknown because you don't know how rusty he's been, but from you know, watching him and hearing Jimbo talk about him, he's going to be a star. I mean, and then you've got Dalvin Cook, who came in, you know, he came in the spring, but he was injured, so he wasn't able to, you know, get out there like he would have been. So he came into the fall camp as fourth, like I said earlier, and Ryan Green was third. But when Green went down, Cook didn't hesitate, you know, just like his running style. He hit the ground running, and that was it. You weren't catching him. So, but Cook does a lot of things well. I really like his hands coming out of the backfield. He catches the ball very well. That's going to be something that separates him from other backs, just how well he understands. Jimbo's raved about his pass blocking ability as a freshman. He said, it's very rare to get somebody who can, you know, come in and understand the protections. And he said that if, you know, you have a running back, you can come in and you can tell them to block this guy and they'll block that guy. But what Dalvin Cook can do is he can read the field, see where a blocker's coming from, identify the defender coming through, and he can block him. He can find that. He finds where he's supposed to be. And Jimbo said that's very rare for a freshman to do.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, I think you're going to see all three guys get a ton of carries. I mean, I think Carlos Williams will probably be around 200 carries on the year, maybe just a little bit south of 200. Pender and probably gets, you know, 70 to 100, and Cook probably pretty close to that as well. The thing that's interesting to me to consider about this is from the reports that we're getting with Pender and knowing how talented he is, there's a real possibility that you could have both Williams and Pender in the NFL next year. I mean, I think it's very possible that Pender moves on to the NFL, if he has a successful season this year and flashes the talent that he has well enough during the season, you know, he's not a guy that likes school. You know, he's been on the dean's list the last few semesters, but he's not a guy that, that likes school. He is a guy that, that can be an NFL running back without question. And, you know, NFL scouts have come a long way in this sense that they want guys with less wear on their tires. So, I mean, he actually, if he flashes well enough, could end up, you know, flashing right into the, you know, into the NFL draft, you know, be a second or third rounder potentially with a good season as a backup, which then, of course, then that makes, you know, somebody like Cook the starter even next year. And then, you know, you start looking at some of the other guys that that they're bringing in. You know, still got Ryan Green at the position, but, you know, you've got Johnny Frazier from North Carolina just committed, and most likely Jacques Patrick from the Orlando area as guys that would also be worked in as big backs as freshmen. But, you know, again, it's the running back position is in a spot, especially with how Florida State's likely to be ahead most of the year. It's in a spot to really shine with this offensive line and with those three guys, to the point where, you know, you could end up having two running backs go in, say, the first three rounds from this roster in the next draft.
Absolutely. I mean, you see guys like Pender and Carlos, you know, that neither of them have really anywhere on them. And that's what could separate Carlos if he has a really, really big year from a guy like Todd Gurley, who everybody regards as the number one running back right now. I mean, I don't think there's any question that, you know, most people consider him the best running back in the country and the top running back on the draft board right now. But where Carlos is has an advantage is he doesn't have those miles. And Gurley has had trouble staying healthy and playing a full season. Carlos hasn't had that problem because, like we said, he doesn't have the miles. So, you know, the NFL will take a look at that, and it could be, you know, you can see Carlos go higher than Gurley in the end because of durability and miles if he has a big season. You could also see the same for Pender. I mean,
Pender's not going before Gurley, though.
Well, no, I didn't mean that Pender was going before Gurley. That would be insane. And I mean, he would have to put up like 2,000 yards.
Yeah, Gurley is a really good looking running back.
That's not going to happen. Todd Gurley is more than likely going to be the number one running back taken.
I think he'll be the number two back taken, but he could be the number one back taken. But that's because I expect Carlos to be the end up passing him over the course of the season, given what I've seen from Carlos Williams in this, and given the combine performance that I expect him to put up, and
yeah,
the lack of miles.
Like I said, it wouldn't surprise me either way, just because, you know, he's more durable. He hasn't taken the hits, and that's really important. A lot of teams have gone to the shared carries in the backfield, to extend the lives of running backs because they take so many hits. Well, Carlos is a guy who hasn't taken really any hits because normally you can't catch him, but he doesn't get hit. So,
well, he's going to take some contact this year, but again, when you're reducing the load to, you know, maybe 200 carries, which I think is about where he'll top out over the course of the year, you know, that you're not taking the beating that, say, you know, programs like Wisconsin, for example, have put their running backs through, or now, you know, what you're going to start seeing at Arkansas and some of these places, you know, and that's why you're starting to see programs like Florida State and Alabama also, who tends to rotate backs. These programs are recruiting just insane numbers of elite backs because they know. They're starting to figure out in high school that, you know, if I want to last more than a year or two in the NFL, I need to have fewer miles on my tires coming out of college. And that's something that, you know, I think they'll do. Now, I expect Carlos Williams to average almost 8 yards a carry on the year. I think actually you're going to see that all three running backs over the course of the season, I think all three running backs are going to average close to 8 yards per carry, which... is fairly efficient.
So you think Carlos hits 1,600 yards?
Yeah, I think he'll hit. I think the over under for Carlos Williams on the year is about 1,500 yards. I expect him to most likely go over.
That would set the single season record at Florida State.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised. So, at any rate, we'll go ahead and wrap on that. We'll do our projections podcast where we can talk a little bit more about this in the near future. But we'll go ahead and wrap this podcast for now. We'll be back soon to talk about the defense as we progress through, as we wrap up spring, or as we wrap up, I'm sorry, preseason camp, and get to preparation for Oklahoma State. For Wayne McGahee, I'm Jason Staples. Thanks for being with us. I made this.